Welcome to Upstaging. My name is Drew.
I'm Adrian.
And I'm Jeremy.
And this is a theater podcast for theater people by theater people. This
week, all the world's a stage and Donald Trump is a shitty fucking actor.
This week, we're going to be discussing 10 Unknowns by John Robin Bates. This week is Jeremy's selection, so he's going to introduce you guys to the play. And again, welcome to Upstaging.
Also, he wrote that music. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was pretty sweet.
Hell yeah, man. Okay, so welcome, guys. I chose the play called 10 Unknowns by John Robin Bates.
You're probably quiet down.
That's,
probably.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe, who knows? Maybe no one will hear me this
one. Oh, well.
Oh, gotta turn that off. Okay, anyways, 10 Unknowns by John Robin Bates. I found this play when I was searching for a monologue, classic monologue hunt on the second floor of the Jackson Library here. Mm-hmm. At UNCG over the summer, and I was trying to find a monologue that I could use for a for the fall audition.
Really mechanical, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Something that was like really active and really punchy was what I was looking for in a monologue, and I found it in the character Judd. And he has this incredible monologue where he's telling off his
totally play Judd, yeah.
Where he's telling off his mentor, and I mean Judd's a little older than I am, but we'll get into that.
Sure.
But I just thought that based off of that one monologue that had so much power and conviction, that this would be a good play to read. I read through it, and here we are doing a podcast about it.
Do you want to run us through like some of the major plot points? Some of that? Do you want to talk about that?
Well, so we have a couple characters here. We have Judd. I cannot remember his last name. Sturgis.
Yeah.
Sturgis for the life of me, I can remember. Judd Sturgis. And he is hired by Trevor Fabricant, who is kind of like an art mogul.
He's an art dealer.
Yeah, dealer.
He's working to move his way on up in the art world. Yeah.
Yeah, and he is hired by Trevor to go down to Mexico and meet with this old and lost forgotten painter, Malcolm Raffleson.
Yeah,
and he's our protagonist. Like that's pretty clear, right? Like,
Raffleson. Yes.
There's no saying.
Yeah.
He's been definitely our protagonist.
For sure.
Well, hold on. Look at that. And in the character list in the content page, it's Raffleson. But for the entire rest of the play, it's Malcolm Raffleson.
Well, I think clearly it's a call to Raphael, the famous painter.
Yeah.
Who I believe he went nuts later in life.
Yeah.
So
also he was the shittiest Ninja Turtle.
Yes. Yeah. He's cool but rude.
Yeah.
So what are you gonna do?
Which one was Raphael? Which
he had the ching 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 the little knives.
Sai. They're called Sai.
Sai.
You plebe.
You nerd.
Okay.
I was a fan of the purple one, but I can't remember. It was that
Donatello.
He's the smart one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, did you guys see the new one with...
Anyway.
That is a different fucking thing.
So, what's the general arc of the story?
We're going to have to make this explicit, aren't we?
No,
well. So pretty much we got this guy, Judd, and he's heading down to Mexico to work for and study under this famous painter, Raffleson. And... He's learning all the tools of the trade, but Raffleson definitely has a different stride to his behavior, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
He's
look at Raphael.
Yeah, he's like stern and kind of an asshole, like right off the bat. And then you introduce this character, Julia, who throws a wrench into everything. And
is that everyone? It's four characters?
Yeah, it's only four character play, yeah.
I love me as well.
So Trevor, the art dealer, is trying to get Malcolm, who was a much older painter. He started back in the 30s and the 40s with the abstract expressionism movement, which we'll talk about later.
Right.
And he got tired of all the politics of it all. He got tired of not being recognized, of people like Jackson Pollock coming in and taking his stardom.
Yeah, because the main thing was he was like a more realistic type painter.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
He would paint things as he actually saw them. I mean, like still like different, but the what sort of edged him out was the popularity of like
Jackson
abstract
Pollock.
Expressionist.
Exactly.
Yeah. It was just so unreal.
Which caused him to want to leave. So he ended up moving down to Mexico. And now Trevor is going to try to use Malcolm. Malcolm Raffleson is going to try to use him to get his way up into the business, and Malcolm wants to come back. Well, does he or doesn't?
Well,
he
struggles with wanting to come back to the art world.
Yeah, so you know he's kind of lost and forgotten almost, and he talks about it how he's twisting this move to Mexico from New York to be such a benefit to him, but truly, is it though?
Right.
Just to, like, completely exclude yourself from the thing to which you've devoted your entire life.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I don't know if we should immediately talk about the end, but it's a major sort of, like, when it's revealed, it kind of, like, reveals a lot about why mm-hmm. it was such an indecision, is because he just does not have that artistic ability anymore. Like, mm-hmm. he has the eye for it, mm-hmm. but he's just... I get it's either he's just hasn't done it for so long, or he's just gotten older that he just can't physically paint. Mm-hmm. Right. And sort of like the big sort of plot twist reveal is that all of these paintings that Trevor has been looking at and wanting to bring up to New York to be part of like this new exhibit that's going to make Malcolm famous again,
right.
they've all been painted by Judd,
who is the mentee.
Right. Yeah. He's just the assistant guy. Like, which, as far as we knew throughout the whole play, he was just mixing paints and shit.
Which Malcolm. He rationalizes that by saying that's how he was treated. A big motif mm-hmm. of this play is revenge, and what revenge really, really means. So I guess we can start talking about some thematic concepts.
It's fantastic. To jump, I guess, I would say that the pinnacle of the theme of revenge in this play, I believe, happens on page 61, and that is what I yanked from my monologue.
Mm-hmm.
Judd's monologue. I could just read a little bit of it.
Sure, go for it.
Shut up. I just want one thing, to know why. In context, he's Judd right now is confronting Raffleson for his attempted use and his attempt to sell the paintings that Judd has actually been painting, but selling them under his own name.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, fraud, and Judd caught him red-handed.
Mm-hmm.
So to continue, to know why. Why on earth did you do this to me? Look at me. This is what you've done. Why, Malcolm? The public nature of it. As soon as there were other people to witness this, you turned. The satisfaction. You made fun of me with Trevor to my face, and worse with her, too. Any opportunity for indignity, humiliation, cabbages for hands. He mentioned one time, earlier on, he used that as an insult. When he was trying to put Judd down to make himself feel better about his own inadequacies, he said that...
Yeah, he was looking at a painting that Judd was painting of Raffleson's mother.
Right.
Which is like, what the fuck? And it's like, he was like, I don't know, it doesn't quite look right. Her hands just like cabbages. Her hands have to like, and then all this artistic bullshit of what her hands have to be like. And like, when you're just reading the play for the first time, you're thinking it's like, oh, he's just not quite satisfied with his own work, but it's not his own work.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, wow, dick.
Yeah. For sure. What I really like...
The meaning of this story is Malcolm Raffleson is a dick.
Yeah. What I really, really like about that monologue is I think it's the first... So, over the course of the play, Malcolm criticizes Judd for being unoriginal. He criticizes him for being exactly like those abstract expressionists that he can't stand, the Jackson Pollock types.
Right.
And then finally...
Judd doesn't like them either.
Exactly.
That's the main reason he didn't really, like, take to art school.
Mm-hmm.
Was because everyone was just like... Ooh, I put like some
paint by numbers
and a blue, and there's a circle, and it means the universe. Give me an A.
You heard of those painters who would do like a big white canvas and then a green slash.
Yeah.
What does it mean?
I think
the earth.
I think the line that he said
of a joke actually.
No offense to visual art majors.
I think the line that he says is like that you could take pictures of toilets flushed or unflushed and pass this class, and I think that's what brought him out. But to the monologue.
Yeah.
But to the monologue, after this entire, an entire play, and I mean, this play takes the course over about 2 months, I think.
Yeah.
After about 2 months, or maybe years, we don't know, of being berated and called unoriginal over and over.
Yeah.
Finally, he comes out and he's saying, you don't even know what original is. Which is another big theme that I think we could talk about is originality and what it means to be original.
Yeah.
Like, what are your own ideas? What is taken from someone else?
Yeah, what is yours, and when does it belong to someone else?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, because very clearly, I mean, if you paint... Judd is saying, you know, I paint these pictures, therefore they are mine.
Sort of.
Which is like a duh, I did it, I own
it. Right, I mean, that seems pretty black and white.
But it's all from
Malcolm's
direction.
Exactly.
And his memory, in some circumstances.
Yeah. And Trevor talks about how there was this big to-do about where there was a painting in Spain that got defaced, and it was of this Italian, essentially shopping mall
of
thing.
Right.
And
like
Trevor,
the monkeys, the Capuchin monkeys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Trevor turns out, Trevor was the one who defaced these paintings because he thought that they were extremely unoriginal.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought that was super interesting that even Trevor despised unoriginality, which I think threw Malcolm kind of for a loop, that threw him back on his heels.
Yeah.
which I liked a lot.
He added some depth to the Trevor character. Mm-hmm. Like, he had always, throughout the whole play, he's just kind of like this nagging, annoying presence that's like, are you going to make your decision yet? Please come with me to New York.
Oh, God,
He would be not easy to play, but his objective is always really...
So
I mean, not like 100% clear, but like... Like, he is, like, very out and open with what he wants. Mm-hmm. And you can, like, clearly see what tactics he's using to get it.
Mm-hmm.
So Trevor would be interesting to play, because then suddenly in that moment you realize there's a lot more depth to that. He's not mm-hmm. just some guy trying to capitalize on other people's talent. He truly feels something about art. He truly thinks something about
art. Which he says that. He says it's like, if I didn't... Malcolm asks him, do you respect me? Because he doesn't want... I don't think Malcolm is in it for the fame. Malcolm is in it for the respect and for the revenge.
That's true. Oh, yeah. That's all for vengeance.
The revenge.
So he asks Trevor, do you respect me? As if he's trying to dig at him, like, all you're interested in is the money, these things. And Trevor responds to him, I think, as genuinely as possible. And he says, do you think that if I didn't respect you, I would be here?
Right.
Which I love. New York to Mexico.
Right.
Which he hates. He says over and over that he despises it.
It's a disgusting neighborhood. There's heroin junkies all over the neighborhood.
Yeah.
All the frogs are dying.
And with, I mean, that's the same thing with Judd, right? He's being berated by Raffleson this entire time, month after month of just beating him mm-hmm. down. And he sticks around because he thinks that he has something to gain from being around this old artistic mind.
He wants to learn something. He tells that to Julia.
Yeah.
For some reason, I kept thinking her name was Sylvia, but it's not.
Yeah. Julia is, just for a little bit of context as well, in case you haven't read the play, Julia is an environmentalist teaching assistant who's from Berkeley, which is in California, who's now come down the coast to Mexico, and she's trying mm-hmm. to save these endangered species of frogs. But... what the important part about her character is that she wants to save everything, I think.
Yeah.
Which, of course, that contrasts with Raff. Raff is very defeatist, almost, because he's so old. I mean, he's in his mid-70s. He's been around forever. So this save the world naivete really conflicts with him, and you see that a lot in a couple different scenes with Julia.
Yeah, Malcolm is so much more cynical.
But,
character. I mean, it's not saying that she's an idiot. She's not she doesn't come in as like this bubbly, like she's still like 30. She's still got some maturity under her, and she still calls out these characters on their bullshit.
Sure.
Which I really enjoy. I mean, at first I was reading this and I was like, oh, look, it's the one female character, and she gets naked. Okay.
Yeah.
But, like, there's something there. Like, I think the actress playing Julia is not going to be bored. She's not going to be like, oh, great, I have this archetype.
But she has a lot to work with.
There's something
there.
She does. There's like,
there's an idealism.
Becomes this sort of like a... It's like they become this weird family mm-hmm. in the end.
Yeah.
Which I just thought was a really cool way to end it. Like, that's about as positive an ending as
you were going to get.
You know, they did kind of fight like a family the entire time.
Yeah.
They did.
They, like, digs at each other and it's like... And it was clear that, like, they really... Like, Judd, in that monologue you said that, like, because... Let's see, what exactly does he say? I don't know. But he made it a point to tell Malcolm that it really hurt him that he put him down in front of her.
Yeah.
She's a newcomer. She just barely got him.
Because I think both of those characters represent idealism. I think that's the point, because... Raff is...
Judd and Sylvia or Malcolm and...
Judd and Julia.
Judd and Julia,
because they're both...
fucking Sylvia, god damn it.
They're both...
You know what I'm thinking of? I'm thinking of The Goat by Edward Albee.
But they're both so young, and Judd is interested in it for the art. I mean, he doesn't want the money. He's interested in it for the art, and... Which, I mean, that could deal with him being... He's an addict. Mm-hmm. So I guess that kind of ties in there, that he's interested in for the art, but secretly he wants the money. I guess there's a depth to that.
Directly, yeah.
An indirect depth, I guess. But whereas Julia, I mean, she doesn't give a shit about painting. You know what I mean? She's interested. She's an environmentalist.
Right.
But she's interested in seeing this old guy and this group of people lie to themselves about their true motives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which I think that's another big theme, is true motives. What do they really want? Because Raff is... I mean, he always talking about, I don't want to go to New York. I don't want this. I don't want that. I don't want my art to be fake. I don't want Judd to be the real owner of this art. But secretly, what he's really interested in is he wants revenge. He wants all of the people mm-hmm. to, and Trevor calls him out on this in one scene. He's more interested in getting people to say, yes, you were right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you were a good painter. Yes, you deserved all this fame years and years ago.
Malcolm's definitely a manipulator.
Yeah,
he is.
But you know what? That as his... His super objective is really immature, is it not?
I think so.
Super immature, like, yeah. But he has to grow a great deal.
But that's so interesting, because he is the elder of the play. He is the 71-year-old man, or whatever he is, who, you know, who should be wiser than all of this. Yeah. But, yeah, you know, just right here, at the end of that monologue that I was telling you about, this is how I finished it. I know what this is. So this is Judd calling out Raffleson.
Mm-hmm.
Take my work, sell it, and sell it as your own, and you get revenge. You get revenge on everyone. Me, because I can actually paint, and all those people whom you loathe who did this to you. It's so malignant, it's brilliant, and it's twisted. You get everything you want. That's what this is. Revenge on all of us.
Mm-hmm. It's almost childish in a way, which is a really neat contrast between them. It's Julia, who is, I think, the youngest person in this cast, is actually the wisest one of them all.
Definitely.
Which is super interesting. That's really interesting.
How old is Judd? I thought he was like...
Judd is in his mid-30s, I thought. Mid-30s, okay. I thought.
For some reason, really? I always imagined him as like 26.
It should say in the very beginning.
And like, Julie's like 30. And one thing that we're forgetting to mention is that Trevor and Judd were a thing.
Yeah.
Like, that's his ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which, it just kind of was like, why...
I wondered if it was and maybe I'm looking too deep into it, but I mean, Trevor, for the most of the course of the play, he represents the money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he absolutely represents, you know, the money that's in art, the money that's in producing creative things.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Judd was always the younger, more idealistic, I'm in it for doing the art, and that's why I love it. So I wonder if that was you can never really separate the two.
Mm-hmm.
As much as they may hate each other, you can never separate the two, which is another interesting...
The money from the passion.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I mean, let's relate that back. What are we in, you know, college for? We're in college for theater.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there has to... Tell me if this hasn't happened to you. People come up to you and say, well... What are you going to do with that major?
Right.
Or how are you going to make money? And, you know, the sucky thing is you do have to answer that. You have to say, you know...
I might wait tables until I die.
I'm going to wait tables until I die, but I'm going to audition every day.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just the life that we chose. But
for sure.
And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Which I think John Robin Bates knew. And I haven't looked much into him.
Right.
But, I mean, I imagine just about every artist who wasn't given everything from a young age. For the most part, any artist who's had to work at their art... For the most part, would say that they've gone through this phase where they were that idealistic person that they were only interested in for the art. And I think the commentary John Robin Bates is trying to make is that eventually you will turn into Raff. You will eventually become this person who is tired of the bullshit, for lack of a better word. He's tired of the politics. He's tired of I think he's just tired of all the entire nonsense, which is what Trevor represents to him. That's why they don't get along.
Yeah, but then if we, for instance, were to turn into that kind of a character, we couldn't swell up into this just immature ass of a person.
Of course.
You know what he reminds me of? He reminds me of, like, characters that are, like, really young, but, like, really smart for their age. So, like, they have a lot of, like, this intelligence.
The Sorkin types, like Aaron Sorkin character types?
Sort of. Like, what am I thinking of? I'm thinking of sort of, like, Ender's Game type geniuses.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these tiny children who just have, like, all of this actual knowledge and, like, ability to learn and understand, but that makes them feel superior when they maybe haven't earned it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Do you think that Raff uses his intelligence and his... I mean, Judd calls him malignant. Do you think that he uses that... That's his tactic. That's his trick. That's how he gets you in.
It seems like... When I was reading it, it felt like sometimes he would... Like, the way... Whenever there was a stage direction that... Like, there were a couple of stage directions where I wouldn't be able to find it, but there were a couple of stage directions in his conversations, especially in Act 1, where... Someone would react strongly to something Malcolm said, and then it would say in parentheses, like, Malcolm smiles. He's loving this.
Oh, yeah, he's loving
this. He's loving this.
It's very...
I think it was Trevor mostly he was fucking with. Like, he was just like, I win. I'm so much smarter than you.
Oh, yeah.
I got you, you bitch.
Now, let me ask this. If Malcolm, his character... was the same age as Judd, which I looked it up, it was in his late 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
If he was the same age as Judd, do you think this play would read differently?
I think so, because I think Judd is...
It'd be more of a rivalry.
Fame wouldn't have been that long ago.
Mm-hmm. The sad thing is I think Judd is just as much of a user as Raph is. And hear me out for a second.
A user, as in,
like, well, uses Malcolm?
Julia, sort of. Julia even calls him out on it. And Julia is the queen of calling people out on things.
Right.
Julia calls him out and says, then why are you even here if you hate him so much? Because Judd, I think deep down, I think he does hate Malcolm. He hates him for who he is. He hates that he gave up on art. He hates that about him.
Yeah.
So Julia calls him out and says, well, then why are you even here? What do you stand to gain from all this? Just so your ex-boyfriend can come and have sex with you sometimes. Like, what do you gain from that?
Judd's definitely not there for Malcolm's benefit.
He's not. He's there for his benefit because he thinks that if he can surround himself with this great painter, that he'll learn. It's like that saying that it says, if you're stupid, surround yourself with smart people. If you're smart, surround yourself with smart people who disagree with you.
Yeah.
And I think that is what Judd is completely about.
Yeah,
which is an interesting kind of parallel between them, and I got a father son type of relationship between them for a couple scenes in the very beginning, and there's
it's almost that, like a Fences type, like a son wanting the approval of the father, but they
whoever said I had to like you,
I think that's what
Raph almost says to Judd. It's whoever said I had to like you. You're here to help me. That's it.
Did you just say Fences?
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
Which
I need to read Fences again.
Yeah, I know, right?
For any of you who haven't read Fences by Tennessee Williams, that's another great.
Isn't it August Williams?
August Wilson. August Wilson, Tennessee Williams.
No, not Tennessee Williams.
We are not editing that out.
Yeah. Oh, well. What I thought was super interesting as some context for the year that they're in, because this takes place in 92.
Right.
And I looked up some of what the New York, like what the art scene was kind of like in the 90s. Because this play was written in 2002. But I mean, with 10 years, I would assume that's historically, that's not a whole lot.
Right.
But I found a quote from the New York Times that said, no event on New York City's contemporary art calendar is more of a scapegoat for the ills of the art world than the biennial. And the biennial is kind of what is exactly what Trevor wants to bring Malcolm up to New York for.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think in that regard,
Right.
So he's trying to show that. I think the ills of the art world means these type of people, the people that are jaded and want revenge and aren't in it for the art anymore.
Right.
As opposed to people like Judd, who while he is a user and wants to get better at painting, he's around Malcolm because he wants to be a better painter, not because he wants his money or because he wants his time or energy, because he wants to get better at painting.
I mean, have you guys ever done that though? Have you guys ever put up with someone like that before, just because you wanted to learn from them? That would be probably a professor then.
Well, I'm of the mindset.
Every teacher I've ever had.
Yeah.
Well, I'm of the mindset that I've learned from every single person I've ever met, whether it be negative or positive, anything like that. Every person I've even talked to on the street, I've learned something from them.
That's true.
But that doesn't mean I like
them. Yeah, but for like a long period of time. I'm talking about like spending a genuinely
long
amount of time with a specific person who you do not maybe connect with, but
you know they have something to offer you, and they maybe won't give it willingly, but you hope you can suck it up through osmosis.
Shows you that's like that Ash and Gary Oak rivalry, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'll never beat you, but let's keep battling.
You got your badge like just as I got to the freaking Vermilion City, goddamn.
Yeah, but I don't know how realistic that is.
What do you mean? As far as being around someone for their own sake? Again, I think that's because Judd is a user. And I think that he'll do whatever he needs to. That's why, and then there's actually a scene in, which I wanted to talk about. There's a scene early on where as they're Judd and Trevor's the art dealer who is Judd's ex-boyfriend, as they're talking, Judd leans up and just kisses him.
Yeah.
And not like a I love you, babe. Like it's a full-on hard kiss. There's passion there. And then it came out of nowhere a little bit. And I think, I know when I was reading it, I was like, where did that even come from, Judd? Why? And as it turns out later, he's using Trevor because Trevor's the one who got him this job.
Mm.
I mean, Trevor is the one who's putting him up with these art dealers. And later on in the show, Trevor tells him that there's another artist in NoHo that he can go visit, that he can go stay with.
That's
why I think he keeps Trevor on that line. He keeps him on that. You know what I mean?
God. Yeah, wow. And the thing
what
is, Trevor
twister.
Trevor uses Judd to threaten Malcolm sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, he'll come in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, he was like, you know, if you're not going to let me take these paintings to New York, I'll just leave, but I'm taking Judd with me.
Yeah, but I'm taking Judd
with
me.
And then Malcolm's like, wait. Because, you know, Judd is his arms.
Yeah.
Is his hands. So it's like, and they're like trying to hide how important each other, each of these people are to each other, from each other, to try to use every one of these other characters.
And the only person that doesn't
another character,
the only person that doesn't use anyone is Julia.
Is Julia.
Yeah, but is that a family then? To bring it back, then with all of that manipulation,
they kind of graduate beyond that. Well, after Trevor leaves.
Let's talk about the end then. Let's talk about this last little scene before we wrap it up.
Okay.
So in the very end,
I want to mention about Julia.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, the reason she's there, I think we can't gloss over that. Like, she doesn't just kind of show up. Like, her motivations and stuff for being there are a little disconnected from the other
characters.
So separate.
It's to check the mating season for frogs in a particular area.
But the thing is, those frogs are going extinct because a species of fish that I don't think is native to the
area. Big mouth bass.
Yeah, is eating them all. And I think that is supposed to sort of mirror
the sort of art world
that Malcolm resents. You know, these big mouth powerful bass, these sort of consumer, like, things that, like, all these sport fishermen, that's what they try, that's why they're there, is for the tourists and stuff. They talk a little bit about how, like, they're in this Mexican town, and the prices are going up because American tourists and Texans and people like that are coming down. And so it's like the sort of, I think another theme in the play is sort of commercialization.
Yeah,
which we touched on a little bit, but like the sort of like, their world around them is becoming more and more like infused with money, and it's harder and harder to escape that. But also it's like just these big fish that don't belong there. They're just kind of ugly and large, and people like them.
Like, do you think
eating these beautiful frogs?
That's what abstract expressionism is. That's what abstract expressionism was. I mean, the people like Jackson Pollock, they're huge canvases and they're all big splatters out of nowhere. Yeah.
Boom, and then, you know, very simple designs and everything. Not not exactly intricate, but bold.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and which is something big, because before that, I mean, it was all about skill and detail, and if you could paint those capuchin monkeys exactly how they looked,
and finesse of a landscape of Italy.
Right, or the landscape that Judd painted of the lake where the frogs are.
So then in the final scene, just as a wrap up, so Trevor finally convinces Malcolm to come to New York and bring his new paintings, and he's going to revitalize his career and put him up in the Whitney Biennial. Or no, he has his own space in the art museum that's going to be all about Malcolm Raffleson.
Or something, right?
Like that. And and Malcolm agrees to do it, and he says, yes, I'll go and I'll do it, which Julia says, you didn't want to go at all. And whatnot. So finally, Trevor leaves and he goes to New York. And he's like, all right, you're on the next plane behind me. Bring all your paintings. Mm-hmm. And then come to find out, Malcolm didn't get on the plane.
Right, yeah.
And Julia asks him, you know, why did you do this? And he's very conflicted. He doesn't know.
Julia's always great about being like Socratic method, like asking the right questions to get people to actually like think about what they really feel instead of
what they're pretending to feel. But the minute give her some bullshit, she calls you out on it. Mm-hmm. She says, all right, how about you give me the real answer now?
Yeah, it's a very,
which I love.
I think the conclusion we're drawing is that Julia is the best.
It's almost motherly, which is interesting because I don't know about you guys and your moms, but my mom is absolutely the type to be like, if you give me some BS answer, I am absolutely going to call you out and say, all right, now how about you give me the real answer?
Right.
And
what do you really think?
Yeah. Raffleson, I mean, he wants to paint his mother out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And I didn't read
it. His mother who he did not like.
I didn't read that as an Oedipus complex type of thing. That's not how it didn't seem like that.
Yeah, he did have a very peculiar relationship with
But I think being told what to do is almost riveting for him, which I think speaks to his style of art, which is very detail oriented and very like almost picturesque.
Can we go back to that end of Act One when he talks about how he's going to paint his mother, but then he goes a little weird and starts talking about how much he did not like his mother, and then the Act One finale is like, it kind of reminded me of Red, where he's like, he puts his hands in the paint and like pulls them out. He starts just like wiping his hands on the canvas, and it sort of makes him
an expressionist thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And he's like staring. Is it Trevor who's in the room or
Judd?
He's a Judd. Okay, that's even. I was hoping that was right because he's like basically it's like I'm. He was like basically that was a challenge to Judd. Like it's like, here you go. You're gonna paint my mom, who I don't like. Mm-hmm. And if you're starting off with this violent shit, go. Mm-hmm. Let's see how good you really are.
You know what? And that's what Judd's there for. Mm. That's his motivation. I bet To be there once again is for crazy shit like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's addicted to it. I think that's why he does drugs.
Right.
That's why
he's not just a heroin addict because the author was like, we need a heroin addict in the play.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the note I took during that scene is Raph seems more interested in his own profoundness than anyone else.
Oh, yeah.
He's more interested in hearing himself talk and hearing what he wants to hear. That he ignores Judge and Julia, essentially. He ignores them both. Because if you notice, whenever Judd will say anything, he goes disinterested and he's like, yeah, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then just starts, you know, putting his hands in the paint and making that vague figure.
Yeah.
Which I thought was another interesting characteristic of Malcolm. Is that, I mean, he wants originality and profoundness, but he's more interested in his own than anyone else's.
Because the thing is, I think he thinks that's the only thing, but that's the only thing he has left.
Yeah, he secluded himself for years.
He has this profoundness and whatever, and it used to be he could channel that into skilled, beautiful painting.
Yeah.
And that's how he could, like, have an outlet for it. But I think what you see with Raffleson, or Ralphison, or whatever the fuck, is someone whose brain is just working at a mile a minute, and he's got nowhere to put it.
Exactly.
He's just all just exploding.
Because he can't paint anymore.
Yeah, but there was this, I distinctly remember there was this moment in the play where, I forget who was asking him, maybe it was Julia, I think it was Julia, who was asking Raffleson what he would do when everybody left.
Yeah.
You know, when it was an empty house, and he just kind of sat there, and
he was
like, well,
I'll
nap, I'll have a lot more time, it'll be a lot more quiet. I mean, and think about it. This is a guy who's been just secluded for.
He doesn't even.
But he loves
mention
the attention.
He doesn't mention painting.
He loves it.
When he says what he's gonna do when he's alone, I don't think he mentions painting.
He doesn't,
because he's not gonna be able to.
No,
he can't.
Yeah,
he's terrible at actually the art.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that brings up motivation. What gets you guys motivated when you're alone and secluded, or when you have other people breathing down your neck? To get something done.
Well, I know for me, it's other people. Like
other people, you know, motivate.
That's
me.
Why this podcast is made.
Yeah, that's true.
Hi guys.
I think I'm the same way. Like I need other people to sounding board things off of to get me to do the work I want to do.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Same.
So in that way, I think we're also all Raffleson because I think all artists are like that. Very few artists are. Well, I can't say that, you know, definitively, but. Most, you know, artists are very collaborative in nature. Creators, I should say, not artists, but creators are very collaborative in nature. That's why, I mean, we have three people here doing a podcast instead of just one of us.
Right.
Yeah, you know? I think, like, that's sort of, like, one of the myths of art. Like, that, like, an artist will, like, sit in a dark room and they'll make they'll write their novel or whatever, and then it'll, like, be passed under the door and someone will pick him up and be like, oh, it's amazing! And then they'll open the door and he's dead because he gave his whole soul. Bullshit.
That
yeah, right. He writes it, and then other people like reads it, and they're like, "Well, that's terrible. You should probably rewrite that, and you need to cross this out, and you need to make this short." It's like, okay.
Every now and then, you get a winner, like Stephen King. That's how he started.
Yeah.
You know, the first.
Well, good for Stephen King.
The first book he wrote, he like crumpled it up and threw it in the trash. His wife
found
it.
The Long Walk.
It might have been
the Long Walk. Maybe I don't know.
Something like that. But anyways, that it's possible. But
not everyone is Stephen King or Vincent Van Gogh.
Yeah,
that's
the vast majority of people, and. With all of us getting so closer nowadays, just to, you know, make it worldly, I guess, all of us are getting so close with everything from social media to just where we are. There are so many people on Earth that you're bound to have to work with someone.
Well, Trevor, and I think...
End of the watch.
I think Malcolm hates that because there's actually a scene where... It's actually at the start of Act 2 where Malcolm is still in Mexico and he hasn't left yet and Trevor is calling him. He's finally gotten Malcolm, who didn't have a telephone before, I should say. This is in 92. There were cell phones.
Yeah.
And he finally gets him to get a telephone and get it plugged in. And then he hangs it up and he smashes it off the wall.
He spends all of Act 2 just like kicking
and
that
doesn't,
shit.
And it doesn't phone. And it doesn't break because it calls again. And then without thinking about it, he kicks it away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that connectedness is also... He's a man of contradictions because he loves having people around him. But that level of interconnectedness... He can't stand.
And I think that's something a lot of people can relate to. It's like, it's like, you struggle with the social thing, but you want people around, but you also want your alone time, but you want people to be there.
God,
you just want them to,
You
just want them to know when you need to be alone, but you also want them there.
So, that was that's a very interesting thing that John Robin Bates, I think, was trying to pull up in this entire play.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with Raffleson's character, is because you're right. He contradicts himself like crazy all the time. Am I going to go to New York? No, I'm not. Yes, I am. No, I'm not. Yes, I am.
Right.
You know, and we all struggle with that. We're all, you know, when you make a big decision, you have to weigh the options, and you go back and forth, left and right, a million times before you make some bold decision, like not getting on a plane.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, like, then Reese Witherspoon chases after him. Don't get on the plane.
Yeah.
No. All right. We have, like, 5 minutes, so we should probably talk about what actually happens, like,
yeah,
at the end.
So,
like,
at
what
the very,
to all the paintings.
At the very end, Trevor doesn't leave. And, or actually, Trevor leaves and Malcolm doesn't leave. He stays
right
down there. And Julia confronts him about it, says, you don't really want these things.
Right.
You want to be chased after. That's what you want. And then she ends up leaving, and so does Judd.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where that scene with Judd of why did you do this happens.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, Julia comes back in and Malcolm is sitting there cooking dinner, like, the next day. And she's like, you were supposed to get on a plane.
Mm-hmm.
And then Judd enters, who's coming off of a heroin binge, and is like, oh, Julia's still here. And they sit down together, and Julia's like, what happened to the paintings? Where are they? And as it turns out, Malcolm took her boat that she was using to find these frogs, put all the paintings on the boat, lit them on fire, and pushed them out onto the lake.
Viking send-off! Ah!
Yeah.
And what's really important is that was something that Malcolm and Judd agreed on. They came to this decision together, and it was clear from the way they talk about it that it was a long and well thought out conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Judd was like, you know, I wanted to keep at least one, but I couldn't choose, so we just burned them all.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just really cool. Like, it was just those paintings were like this huge wedge between them.
I think it was a you can't take it with you type of thing.
Sort
because
of,
that
yeah.
that physical thing was what was keeping them apart, the actual
right.
painting.
The sort of like resentment they had for each other, Malcolm for Judd's youth and ability, and Judd for Malcolm's mind and, like, I guess, power in their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And they just tore it all down and sort of made a new start. And I think the play ends with a whole lot of hope.
Yeah. Yeah. All
and,
one the wiser.
And then what's interesting is that Raffleson, he essentially monologues for the end, for the last about page of the play or so.
Right.
And the first words that he says in the start of this monologue is, I once was an artist. So I think he's even realized that...
Huge, huge character development.
Right.
I think so. He's finally come into his own. And then at the very end, they're sitting down drinking this cheap wine in shitty glasses and eating dinner together.
Yeah, just eating, like, rice and chicken.
And he says, once upon a time, I made some pictures. I had a name for myself, a title, all that. It evaporates, and then you're left with this. He smiles. Three people, a drink, and a meal. And even though it's not enough, it'll have to do. To Last Suppers, and that's the end.
Yeah.
Which I think is, I mean, The Last Supper is right before he died. I think this is metaphorically...
You mean Jesus, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. That, yeah. But, no, the other guy at The Last Supper.
The other guy at The Last Supper, they all died.
Jesus! But this is his Last Supper because he understands now he truly has to fade into obscurity with no really recourse that he can do because Judd's not going to paint for him again.
Right.
And Julia, I don't think she's ever going to trust him again.
Yeah.
But finally, he acknowledges that, I mean, being together is the only thing that was real over the past several years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he finally accepts that. I mean, what did you guys think about that?
Yeah, I just thought it was full of hope. I thought it's possible that these three people could even, like, just exist together
mm-hmm.
for a while after that. I don't know what Malcolm's going to do.
Yeah.
You know, like, without that.
I mean...
I don't know if he can, like... If Malcolm and Judd can, like, continue, like, some sort of, like, weird, like, teacher apprentice relationship,
mm-hmm.
I don't even think that's
going to
happen.
They're definitely at a different spot now.
Mm-hmm.
They're much more equals.
It's possible
yeah.
they don't even, like, stay in that place very long. It's possible Judd will have to go and try and figure out
go back
out
to New York and do what he has to do with himself.
But, you know, it ended on this more positive note.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really cool.
What's interesting is you actually don't see Trevor over the entire course of the second act, which I think that's very indicative of when the money is gone, what do you really have left?
Right.
When,
yeah.
And in the end, it's the
yeah.
people. It's not the art, it's not the money, it's the people behind it.
Right.
So I think in the end, it's celebrating the
it's
artist
about,
over
it's about
the
Malcolm's
art.
Mother.
Yeah, it's obvious.
The
it's,
real person who's
exactly.
dead, I think.
It's about, yeah. Is there any other points that you guys want to talk about with this play?
Well,
I had a real quick one, but it's not like an ending worthy. I just thought about the connection between Judd and Julia, how they're both students who are forced to do the dirty work of people who think they're more important and smarter. Like, she's
yeah.
the reason that she's down there is because she's being sent there by the actual professors, and that if she finds it, she says, if I find anything interesting, they'll come down here themselves and take credit for it. And that's exactly what Judd is doing.
Right.
So, hey, yo, college kids, do the work that you want to do,
mm-hmm.
and don't get
yeah.
yourself you know, wrapped up in something that, you know, doesn't benefit you.
Because in the end, what you've created, it'll fade away. And the only thing that's going to be left is you and the people that you're able to work with. And I think that is the most important thing about this play, is that you might be one of the 10 unknowns.
Whoa. You might end up being... never actually talked about why it's called that.
Ten unknowns. It's called Ten Unknowns because Malcolm was considered one of the 10 unknowns of 1949. He was an unknown painter, but I mean,
it was like some art gallery that was like, "Ooh, look, up and coming artists to watch," and then nothing.
But my point is that in the end, you may become one of the 10 unknowns, and your art may fade away, and no one may know who you were. But the people who you surrounded yourself with are who is going to remember you,
and they know who you are.
Yeah,
and they really know who you are.
And I think that's the most important part of this entire play.
Like, Trevor doesn't know who Malcolm is. Judd and Julia, they have a much better idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, all right, guys.
I think we can call that an episode.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much for listening in on our first podcast of Upstaging.
And next week, Adrian is going to be picking our next play. Adrian, why don't you talk about that real quick?
We are going to be reading Women and Wallace, which is a show I did 2 summers ago, and I think it's really good, and it's also one act, so it's not too long a...
Do you know the playwright?
John Mark Sherman is his name. Another three-named Jonathan.
Feel free to read along, guys, and we will be doing these podcasts once a week, hopefully.
Hopefully, yeah.
Every Saturday is what we're aiming to put out. And
they'll probably be published on Sundays or Mondays.
Sundays,
we'll figure it out. But, look out for
us. Today's a Saturday.
Find one of us. I'm sure we'll let you know. We can't keep our fucking mouths shut.
Yeah.
That's why we're doing this.
Anyways, thank you, guys. I'm going to play this out one more time. And tell your friends. And
tune in next week for the next episode of Upstaging. Thank you.